From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
That's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made as we head on into another brutal Sacramento Valley summer. Appreciate it. Well, maybe you're listening in the hills. Maybe you're listening in Oregon or somewhere. But appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour. And we appreciate that Julie Sly, the editor of the Catholic Herald magazine, joins us today live and in person.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Good. And I missed it last week.
Pull that microphone a little closer there.
Oh, okay.
We missed you last week.
Oh, I missed the hot weather last week.
Oh, did you? You
were cycling in the Grand Tetons.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
it was
beautiful.
Did you get to the top of the Grand Tetons?
Did you
stay in the valley, right?
No, well, we were in Driggs, Idaho for 3 days on the other side of the pass, and I actually didn't ride 12 miles up on my road bike.
Oh,
12 miles and 2,000 feet.
I was going to say, how high elevation?
Up to Grand Tarhi Resort.
Right.
That was like, I think at the resort it was 7,700 feet.
Is the resort right in the Tetons? Or is it just
no, it's on
them?
The other side.
Right.
It's on the Idaho side.
On Idaho, not
but
the
you
Jackson
can see
Hole
the Tetons
side.
From the, yes, not on the Jackson,
the
Tetons Wyoming
are so
side.
So iconic. If
yes.
you didn't believe in God before you saw the Tetons,
oh, yes.
you would believe in God afterwards.
Yeah, definitely.
A geologist can tell me a billion different reasons how they were
right.
formed and everything.
Apparently they're younger than the Rocky Mountains, we
I
heard.
I have trouble with that. You know, I mean, do they make fun of the Rockies? Do they go, nah, nah, you know, like, we're young. Than you are.
They're just, I guess there's more of them than the Rocky Mountains
there's
still
a couple
glaciers up there.
Yeah,
you
oh,
can
yeah.
see.
Yeah. We're speaking of the Grand Tetons, which is a national park in Wyoming.
Yes, yeah.
And very near
it
Yellowstone.
It was not affected by the Yellowstone floods, no.
Yeah.
And my tour wasn't scheduled to go to Yellowstone, so... yeah, we stayed on the Driggs, Idaho side mm-hmm. originally, and then I did that 12-mile climb, and it was 2,000 feet and 12 miles.
That's rough.
And then it was a whole day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're 4 out of the 11 people on the tour made
and
it.
And at the pass, you're at about 8,000 feet?
At that ski resort, you're about 7,700
okay.
feet. And then I took the chairlift up, which I've never taken, and I don't ski. But I took the chairlift up to 10,000 feet.
And is that right
okay.
on one of the Tetons, or is it just near
no,
that?
You can look across and see the Tetons.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I think that was like Mount Hen or something. Or Hen. I don't remember the name of
There's so
of the
many
mountains.
Mountains there, you don't know how to
yeah.
name them all.
Yeah. So that was fun, but it was definitely high up.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been on a chairlift before, because I don't ski. But
yeah.
I went up there for the view.
I've been on a few... Just summer,
I've been on
summer,
a gondola,
summer
but not
tourist.
An open ski,
oh, an open
ski chair.
Yeah, I was on an open ski chair with our kids when they weren't little, but they were in that, well, 8 to 10, 12 age on Mount Hood in the summer, you know. And,
yes.
And I've been on the same thing, a gondola.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe there wasn't even a bar across us.
Oh, we didn't have the bar,
you know,
thank
like,
goodness.
not that it would have made much difference.
We had the bar, and I didn't look down that much.
The whole time, I was
yeah.
just like...
And I didn't ride after, pretty much right after I finished the ride, so I didn't have time to mull it over. I'm like,
yeah.
okay, get on the ski lift.
I remember making a bar with my arms for
oh,
the kids.
Oh, no, we had a bar that came down, thank goodness. And then, so I did that, and then we did, we rode into the park... From we were shuttled over the pass. That's too dangerous to ride that pass over to Jackson.
Yeah.
And then we rode. There's a beautiful bike path into Jackson, Wyoming. And so we rode that. We did about 40, 45 miles every day, except the day that we did the climb.
Jackson,
and then
Wyoming.
The other rides, there's a beautiful bike path all the way from Jackson into Jenny Lake and then to Jackson Lake Lodge. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we rode that both ways, and we did some side roads. We had a raft trip on the Snake River in the morning.
In Idaho?
That was in Wyoming.
In Wyoming,
yeah,
okay.
As it started at Jackson. Well, we were taken from Jackson Lake Lodge to put it at the river, and then it ends at Dornan's Restaurant.
Just about
and
the
lodge
best name
in the park.
For a river that there is, the Snake.
The Snake, yeah.
And salmon... From the Pacific Ocean, you know, you talk about nature and God and creation. salmon from the Pacific Ocean make it all the way up the Snake River to spawn.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And climbing that's the fish only ladders part, at the dams.
Other than, of course, we know Point Reyes National Seashore, which is not a park, has the dairies over there and stuff. But apparently when they, that part, I think, was established in 1957, although some of the land for it was bought before. But there's still three or four ranches private inside the park that they didn't make them give up their land or anything.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyway, beautiful.
That's a beautiful area. Yeah. It's God's country.
I never know. They're in the winter, though.
No,
it's as people have told me, they have two seasons: snow and mud.
Well, it is interesting. You know, even when the weather gets nice, then it gets pretty muddy.
Yeah,
for quite a while.
Yeah, but they're in a drought too.
Yeah,
you know, all those western states. Yeah, the lake was really, really low. We stayed at these 100-year-old cabins that have been moved along Jackson Lake, Holter Bay Village, and I had been at that lake before, and they're like, you can't even get a boat or in there or anything anymore. The marina's all empty. It's that low. Yeah, kind of like Folsom here.
Right.
Had been. Yeah. Wow. So we pray for rain.
We are praying for it. They got rain in Yellowstone. I guess the floods in Yellowstone were, there had been a late snowfall.
Yeah, and then they got a lot of rain, and it warmed up. And then the snow melted, and
so
then
you
the
got
roads.
the double dealing. I remember a few years ago, maybe 20 years ago, when that happened here, where it was
happened at Yosemite, I think, on the Merced River on one of those.
And there was a time where the Truckee River, because same thing, there was heavy snowfall, and then one of the warm, the Pineapple Express came in and melted and jumped tons
that
of rain.
That happened on Highway 50, too, where,
50 and 80.
Where they had to reroute it, remember? Yeah.
And, it's Mother Nature still rules.
But they had already had, opened up the southern part of Yellowstone last week.
Yeah.
Yellowstone's huge compared to Grand Teton.
Oh, yeah. Yellowstone
in the
is
amount
like
of
that
land.
That little, people see the, the little rectangle in the northwestern corner of Wyoming, but actually there's a little bit of Yellowstone in Montana
and Idaho.
A little bit in Idaho.
Yeah, it's in three states.
Yeah, but almost all of it is in Wyoming.
Right,
and it's really if anyone has never been, it's a spectacular.
It's worth
place
a trip to, sure.
Yeah,
it's worth a driving trip.
Of course, if you're not from California, everybody when they come to California, they want to go to Yosemite, which
that's
is pretty
true.
Spectacular too.
Yeah. I tend to go where there's less crowds. So I kind of, I mean, I've been to Yosemite, but I'd rather go to Sequoia or some of the other
Sequoia's
ones
beautiful.
Up north.
Sequoia is a beautiful park.
Yeah.
The redwoods are very sparsely attended for the beauty that's up
there. Yes, yeah. It's just it's farther driving in some of the parts. More publicity than others, and didn't see any moose though. We were trying to see a moose. We didn't see a grizzly bear from afar, and the pronghorn are they sheep? Although I think we were calling them antelope, but they were really the pronghorn.
The antelopes are like giant rabbits.
and we saw some elk, but never a moose. Yeah. Oh, and one bison we saw. Yeah, but from far away. You don't want to be hosing up to any of those.
No, at least two or three times a year, you'll read about somebody getting too close to a bison to take a picture because they're just chewing the grass, and you walk up and all of a sudden, and they're faster than you are.
Oh yeah. No, I'm in from afar.
Yeah.
So, do we want to talk about the July August?
Yes. Is it all about Yellowstone and Jackson Hole?
No.
So, what's the difference between? It used to call it Jackson Hole. Now they just call it Jackson.
The town
is Jackson.
I think the ski resort is Jackson Hill.
Yeah. Okay.
And if you have a few or several million to drop on a house, that's where that's become the new
elite. A lot of money
elite.
In that area. Yes.
Yeah, that's the new. It's not Vail or Aspen
the new,
anymore.
Yeah,
it's Jackson.
You're exactly right.
Yeah. So our July, August magazine was focusing on the accompanying church.
Mm-hmm.
And so our cover story is about Jenny Teeters, and she is a member of the Pastoral Council at Our Lady of the Assumption Parish in Carmichael. And she was gracious enough to share her very personal story with us about her path to sobriety. And with the help of God and her faith, she was able to overcome alcoholism, which had plagued her life for many years.
How do you arrive at doing a story like this in the Catholic Herald?
We had kind of a theme that touched on this somewhat last year, and I tried to contact some Catholic counselors that I knew that might have worked with someone trying to become sober, either from drugs or alcohol. And, you know, it's a tough thing for people to want to go public
about,
even if we kept their name anonymous or something. So I wasn't able to find someone at that time. And actually, I often, when I have time or when I'm somehow see it on Facebook or somewhere else, I look at the parish bulletins. A lot of our parishes have newsletters now.
Right.
And after that time, I actually saw this short story, shorter, on Jenny in the newsletter at OLA Carmichael online.
Wow.
And I saw that she was had a little story about her in their newsletter because she was leading the Catholic in recovery chapter at the parish,
at the ministries. Yeah.
And
covers, I would presume, a wide range of addiction?
Yes, it could be like sexual addiction or drug addiction or, you know, or alcohol. It's pretty wide-ranging. Mm-hmm. And, of course, normally, the ministry helps them rely on their faith and support of other Catholics. But, of course, depending on the addiction, you would be seeking other treatment.
Sure.
You might be an outpatient or inpatient treatment for whatever your addiction is.
Or
you may not even know
AA
you have an addiction.
Like that. Yeah,
and you're trying to see, well, maybe this is over the top, what I'm doing.
Right.
So I saw that story. I kind of could tell from one of the quotes in that story from Jenny that she had gone through her own personal experience of getting to sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of kept it in my tickler file. And then when this theme came up with the magazine, I decided I would contact her to see if she would tell her story. Would she feel comfortable having it in the magazine? And, as a lot of people, it's not something that they want to reveal. It's not easy to reveal. And so I contacted her, and we talked on the phone, and she thought about it. And she said, I really would like to share my story with people so they could maybe learn from it. I could help others. We also have a sidebar in the story about Juan, and I'm going to mispronounce his last name. I'm going to say it Yinguez, Yinguez. I'm not sure how you pronounce that totally. But Juan also is kind of a mentor to Jenny. He has not battled addiction, but had many people in his family, even some die from addiction. And he is the recent past chair of the Parish Pastoral Council at OLA, and he thought the ministry was so important that he's been involved in it, even though he himself has not been battling addiction, but knows what an important issue it is. So Jenny actually has been married for 22 years. She has her husband, her teenage daughter, and she had been away from the church for quite a while and then eventually came back to the church, but had been dealing with the alcohol problem for quite a while. I mean, it was kind of known to her family, but she was even hiding it from her family. She says, For years, she knew she was a high-functioning alcoholic. My only choices were to either help or die. I was hiding it from everyone, including my family. They definitely knew alcohol was a problem, but it got to a point over all our years of marriage. I never drank hard liquor. She told me she would just drink like wine and stuff, but then when nobody was around, she would drink more hard liquor. So she felt like she was living a lie. So over time, she came to realize she needed help. Pardon the process was two of her aunts are members of the Sisters of the Society devoted to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and they live in Southern California. And Jenny's dad was diagnosed with cancer way back in 2008. He kind of came back to his faith. His sisters would come and visit him, her aunts. And so she got very, and she had attended their camps when she was little, little girl. So she got her daughters to go. She eventually volunteered at the camps. And then when she would receive the Sacrament of Reconciliation, the priest told her at penance that she needed to work on her personal relationship with Jesus, and that probably included coming clean to her family. So it took her over several years to come to this realization while she was still struggling with alcoholism. And then after her coming back to the faith, I'm kind of shortening this a bit, but she felt strong. She started to attend Mass at OLA. She felt strongly called to participate, so she became a lector, a Eucharistic minister. She started serving on the Parish Pastoral Council in 2018, and that's when the council offered a retreat with several ministries at the parish, and one of the people who came to speak was the founder of Catholic in Recovery. It's a man from San Diego named Scott Wieman. And Jenny says, I felt this was for me. I felt so close to God. So she was actually asked by Father Edwino Silveria and Juan on the pastoral council to actually start and lead the ministry.
Wow.
But they did not know, you know, that she was struggling with alcoholism herself. At the same time, in 2019, she lost her job, and her physical and mental health were really deteriorating. She says, one night I was not sleeping, and I always drank to sleep. I was crying my heart out, and I prayed the first three of the 12 steps, I'm sure which people are familiar with, because I had memorized them. I felt was powerless over alcohol. My life was unmanageable. I prayed for a power greater than myself to restore me. And most important, that I turn my life and my will over to God, begging him to help me. So eventually, she told her family, she had already started the Catholics in Recovery group, and she told the other people in that group, which, interesting, she says, the day I told my family, I also texted the other men that were in Catholic and recovery ministry. I thought nobody was aware of my problem. She laughs. I texted them to tell them I was an alcoholic sick and I had been hiding it. It was not a surprise to them. They all knew already. Yeah. So, of course, she did get her own treatment. I know at she went through an outpatient program for a year at Kaiser Hospital and various other things. And then she has been sober for 2.5 years and still leading the Catholic in Recovery ministry in OLA. So quite a story. She's now serving on the national board of the Catholic in Recovery ministry. And she says, in the ministry at the parish, everything is confidential, everything that's shared. They also do some of it through Zoom. So if someone wanted to listen in and turn off their camera, they can do that. You know, they want to make it comfortable for people. And so the format of each meeting is they include the 12 steps and reflection and questions based on the upcoming Sunday Mass. I think they meet on Tuesdays, if I recall. But so then they would be discussing the readings for the upcoming Sunday, talking about anything they want to share. There's some directed reflection. And she says that prayer, including the prayer of St. Francis, is an integral part of the program. The ministry is ongoing, so people can continue to participate. They can drop out for a while. They can come back. You know, everybody's kind of on their own path there. Yeah, so quite a remarkable story.
Yeah, it's really, really brave of her to come out. And I'm sure her motivation, or I can assume her motivation, is to help other people.
Yeah, she actually told me, as we always kind of put resources and contacts for people for resources, and she actually said, you can put my personal email in the magazine, which I did. She
That's
said,
great.
If anyone has a question, they're struggling with addiction, or she said, I would be happy to respond to them by email, you know, with whatever help she can give them.
And it's a pervasive problem, alcoholism, and I think there's everybody has a story.
Sure.
You know, we don't know if there's a genetic component or if there's not, it's probably a wide mix of things.
Right. But or a lot of people just have a chemical addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, for one person who drink a glass of wine and feel boom. Nothing, another person and send them spiraling back into having to have alcohol all the time.
Yeah, we're virtually, you hear, you know, that you have to be completely off, one drink can send, like you say, and yet it seems like most families have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean every single family, but you know, an aunt, an uncle, a father,
would probably
a mother.
Be hard to find enough family or in their extended family to.
That didn't somewhere have that problem, and it's odd because the drinking is in the Bible. You know, the wedding feast at Cana, changing the water to wine. It's not something that's prohibited, and it's not like they're doing something immoral by drinking alcohol. And yet there remains in some people's minds a stigma involved. You know, when somebody says I'm alcoholic, it will conjure up in different things for different people.
Yeah.
I'm always surprised when someone says to me, I'm an alcoholic, and they haven't had a drink in 12 years, but they still refer to themselves as an alcoholic because they know that they carry that either that tendency or that gene or whatever it is that makes them respond to alcohol the way they do.
Right.
And I had a good friend who was alcoholic, and he said, the hardest part for him was he loved to go to backyard barbecues and have a beer. And, he didn't, it wasn't, he was interested in getting drunk. But it was part of his social life. And how can I go to the backyard barbecue and drink a bottle of water? Or it just wasn't the same, he said, and he had been sober for quite a while, but he says, I feel like I'm living a half life.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, oh, I'm free of alcohol.
Yeah.
He was happy to be free of alcohol, but he still, had that desire.
Right.
That's got to be very, very, very difficult. And that's, and it's, Jenny's story is so strong because she turned to God.
Yeah.
Who has all the answers.
Right. So I want to thank Jenny and Juan for sharing with us on that. And hopefully that's a resource with people. I'm not aware that we have any other parishes who have taken up that ministry, particular.
Yeah.
Ministry,
sometimes people say, "Well, what sort of ministries does your church have? Do your parish have?" Mm-hmm. People that aren't Catholic and know that I am, and you name some of the obvious ones, and I say, but there are a lot of ministries that are sometimes unique to that parish.
Yes,
and this may well be one of them.
Yeah, and she also mentioned that in a lot of people from other parishes.
Yeah,
and certainly, there's a lot of spirituality in the 12 steps.
Right.
And certainly there are many, many Catholics involved in AA and other recovery ministries and that. But this particular one, does really integrate their faith. And I think she said people who participate appreciate that aspect and that freedom to be able to talk about their faith and even connect it with the liturgy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
you know, and alcohol is so much a part of the culture in terms of sort of living the good life and having
right.
a good time. And you've seen the explosion of brew pubs where beer used to be like a 3.2 alcohol, and some of the beer they're brewing, you know, the small breweries.
And a lot more alcohol.
8-9%
I don't drink
alcohol.
Beer, so yeah.
So it's really up there.
Yeah.
You don't guzzle a beer anymore.
No. You can do the old Jules non-alcoholic or whatever,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you to Jenny and Juan, and that's our cover story.
Yeah, that's
and
good for them. That's,
yeah.
You know.
So.
Brave, but
yeah.
probably you're gonna
yeah.
have, you're gonna have people are gonna take advantage of that.
Oh,
email.
I think so.
And,
yeah,
and that story.
And I'm sure Jenny, if you have Jenny on at some point, she can tell it better than yeah. I could. But yeah, she's really, really a lovely, lovely person, and she's got her own business now. She does a lot with advising businesses, leadership, coaching. She's got a whole bunch of skills.
That's right.
Yeah. So, anyway, then we have Bishop Soto's column, The Real Presence of Jesus in the Eucharist Invites Us to Be Truly Present to Him. So he talks about priests that he never had the good fortune of taking a class from at St. John's in Camarillo, Monsignor James O'Reilly, but just talking about that what a wise priest he was. He did a lot of hospital visits, and Bishop Soto learned a lot from him just about the act of presence, kind of in the vein of, you know, a lot of times we don't know what to say to people when they're going through trauma
right.
or hardship
right.
or difficult times, but simply being present
right.
as Christ is present in the Eucharist
right. Right.
to us and be of comfort to people.
Well, this sort of is kicking off the, you know, the Eucharistic
yes,
revival.
Yes, also he talks about the National Eucharistic Revival, which actually in our September-October issue we're going to have a special report on and some backgrounders on. And that's a pastoral initiative that was started by the U.S. bishops,
mm-hmm.
announced last year but started this year, which this year is really kind of gearing up for the diocesan response
right.
to it and how parishes will be involved. And so across the U.S., each diocese hit it off on Corpus Christi Sunday.
Right. Right.
Yeah, this past Sunday.
The Father's Day, Corpus Christi Sunday,
yeah, I'm
Juneteenth.
Sorry. Yeah, Sunday just, before last,
yeah.
not this past
just,
Sunday. Sorry.
Yeah, but you know, it's interesting. I think I don't know that this had anything to do with it, but you know, recent polling saying that it was not a very high percentage of Catholics who believe in the real presence. I mean,
no.
or it was a stunning percentage that didn't believe, maybe a third,
or I'm
something
not
can't like
remember
that.
Even how many didn't know
what it meant. It really meant, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. And it was like, wow, the source and summit of our faith, and yet, and so it wasn't. I don't think it's necessarily. It wasn't like a hostile disbelief or
no.
anything. It was just like, well, I think it's a symbol, or and I don't know how the questions were asked. I
uh-huh.
mean, because sometimes. Do you believe the Eucharist is a symbol? You might get an answer from a person who thinks it's truly the body and blood, but also thinks it's
yes.
a symbol.
Right.
You know, both, you know.
Yeah.
And but it, I don't know if we're unique in that belief but among Christians, but we're pretty close. There may be a few other, but most of them, you know, they say it is a symbol.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And many, many Christian religions have a communion of some sort.
Yes.
You know, but,
yes.
but don't say that it's the body and blood.
Right,
that,
right.
That represents that, certainly.
Yeah.
Represents the Last Supper.
Right.
But Jesus' words are pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty clear. It's like whether I would want to believe it or not, when Jesus says those words, take this is my body, take mm-hmm. this is my drink, this is my blood, or eat this is my body, who am I arguing with Jesus?
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, I might not scientifically understand it,
mm-hmm.
but it's the truth. And,
yeah.
you know, and people say, well, that's your belief, Bob. And I go, no, it's more than a belief. It's a truth.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a difference.
Yeah.
You know, you can believe in things that aren't true. And you can not believe in things that are true. And the truth of the body and blood of Christ in the Eucharist is there, whether or not I believe it. It's
yeah.
it's a truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's a really, I don't know how you could parse Jesus' words and try, oh, well, he meant this or he meant that, or it was 2,000 years ago, or, you know, it was the Last Supper, and he was, you know, he wasn't thinking clearly, you know. No, he said those words.
Yeah.
And he said them for a reason.
Yeah.
I think everything is important. Anything Jesus said was important, but what a crucial time in the life of Jesus, the
yeah.
Last Supper, the day before he died, and he said those words.
Mm-hmm.
Gathered around his disciples.
Yeah.
Who are going to go out and spread the word.
Right.
So you can not believe it if you don't want to, but it's the truth.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Amen.
That was quite a mini homily,
yeah,
right
a mini
there.
Homily. There you go. In fact, the Pope the other day said, they asked him about homilies, and he said, yeah. 8 minutes.
Oh, 8 minutes.
8 minutes, he said.
Yeah, so you really.
I think it was the Pope.
You really condensed it
yeah,
down.
I condensed. Yeah, I got it down to about 80 seconds there. Okay, run that tape. We got to time it.
So I do want to. Refer to our website too, the diocesan website, scd.org.
Yes.
Because if you want to read more, we have Bishop Soto's homily from the Corpus Christi Sunday.
Oh, very good.
Yes, you can read that on the website. We have other articles about the National Eucharistic Revival on there. And we won't have, we did just have the ordination of 17 new permanent deacons this
right.
past Saturday
right.
at the cathedral. So we will have coverage on that, not until our September-October issue,
right.
as we had already gone to press with the July-August
wow,
issue
17.
In mid-June. So, but you can read Bishop's remarks from the deacon's ordination. Mm-hmm. on Saturday
right.
there, and there's also some photos. And so I went, you know, a lot of time, I mean, certainly in between our magazines, and we have to kind of make decisions on what immediately goes on the website or social media
right.
and what you know, we might cover it in a different way
right.
in the magazine. So it's beneficial if people want more immediate information on the website.
Right.
Yeah. And so, anyway, Bishop's homily is there. If you, we also have a separate tab on the website, scd.org. I believe it's up there near the top. It just says Eucharistic Revival. They can click on that. If you want to see more, read more on the national level, on the National Eucharistic Revival, the website is eucharisticrevival.org, and that's from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So,
very good. It will be interesting to see how that all unfolds
yes.
in the weeks and months
yeah.
and years ahead.
So I want to move on to another feature that mm-hmm. we have. Actually, in one of our columns is related. Part of our stories on the accompanying church, we looked at the grief share ministry, how it accompanies the sorrowful at Holy Spirit Parish in Fairfield.
Mm-hmm.
And also along with that, we have a spiritual fitness column by Laurel Hilliker that the title is Bearing Loss Together with Christ and in Community. And she gives some tips there on dealing with all types of loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so our feature by Lynette Magnino on Holy Spirit Parish is featuring two women, Teresa Yeomans and Roxanne Bradley, who both went through their own grief process for different reasons, and they came together as they had mutual interests, and they were sharing their faith together about this. And so they came together to coordinate the Grief Share ministry, which helps with sharing, observing, and journeying through grief. And so they bring their own personal stories of loss as to how they got involved in this ministry. Teresa says, "I think Roxanne and I are testimony that we can move through grief. It's not going to be an easy journey, and this is not magic." Teresa lost her husband, I think it was about 4 years ago, after 40 years of marriage. And she says, "You have to put in the work, and you will go from mourning to joy." Mourning spelled M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. She says, "When my husband passed away, I needed some kind of support, and I found out about the Grief Share ministry online." She searched and found the non-denominational, nonprofit ministry, which is based in North Carolina, and it produces video-based curriculums to help churches around the world deliver several compassionate turnkey programs that navigate life's crises, including, and it goes beyond the immediate pastoral care offered by the funeral ministry and that. So Teresa typed in her zip code to find a local Grief Share ministry. When she told a fellow parishioner about her own positive experience and healing journey, she felt encouraged to propose the ministry to Father Joel Janabia, the pastor. She says, I love this. "I put my notes together and went to Father Joel with a brilliant sales pitch." Doesn't this amazing? Yeah. Now, all of these stories show you, at least in my mind, we have so many people in our parishes who take the initiative.
They just take the initiative and get something started.
Yeah. Yes. They don't just sit around and...
Which is part of what Vatican II was about.
Yeah. She remembers that day 4 years ago when Father Joel was still new to the parish. She laughs as she recalls how his approval included the charge to lead the ministry. She said, "I was a religious education teacher for 40 years, and I figured teaching was teaching," she said. So she talked with Father Joel and got the ministry started. Then later on, Roxanne, her coordinator, met Teresa at Bible study. They started talking, and Teresa reached out to Roxanne after hearing of how the same day that Roxanne retired, she lost her father to cancer. Roxanne says, "I didn't know what to expect. We were going through the classes, and I realized that not only was I grieving the loss of my dad, but also all the transitions that had occurred. I had not grieved properly." And then she says, self-talk also occurs in the minds of the bereaved. People will think, is this normal? Am I crazy? I'm not ready. She concedes many are not ready or may require professional help. Others seek answers to hard questions as they grapple with a range of emotions. Roxanne says, "The big thing for me is the reinforcement that God is here with me. You become more tuned in, listening to the promptings of the Holy Spirit." So they, I think twice a year or three times a year, they welcome people to join them. Oh, and it's two times a year, either in the spring or fall for a 15-week cycle of sessions. Two-hour self-contained sessions occur once a week with video statements, a companion workbook, and scripture woven into the reflection and conversation. And they've had people come from various churches, including non-Catholics, come and attend because they wanted to find out what was all about.
Sure.
One curious non-Catholic attendee came and paused as others blessed themselves with the sign of the cross. She asked about the ancient practice, requested another demonstration, and wanted to learn more in her search for hope and consolation. Mm. Sort of interesting, huh? And Roxanne says it's so important that people understand that grief is a part of life, a natural part of our spiritual life. And she adds, I always say grief is a byproduct of love, with the reminder of Christ's command to love.
That's true. Mm-hmm. It's true. If you haven't loved, you don't feel the loss.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, oh, I feel bad for that person or something. But, you know, if you didn't love them, it's a different, you know, I guess it's how sometimes we can go on in the world. You turn the news on and you see this bad thing happened here, mm-hmm. and this bomb went off here, and this accident happened here, and this person, famous person, or whatever, and you go, wow. I'm so glad that didn't happen to me today or something, mm-hmm. you know, and you feel bad for the people involved.
Right.
But you don't have that long grief because you weren't intimately involved with those people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to go on.
Yeah.
But
And there's a lot of people who have died of COVID and related.
An awful lot. And died in a way that, especially in the early going,
mm-hmm.
where the family, you got a sore throat and a fever, and they took you to the emergency room, and they weren't even allowed in the emergency room, and that ends up being the last time you saw them in person.
Right.
You know, and something you really weren't expecting when you took them to the emergency
room. And then you talked to the healthcare workers, and of course, they were grieving for people they didn't even really know.
They didn't even know, because they got so close to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In the early, people are still dying of COVID, but not in the great numbers that there were.
Yeah. So then we also have a feature about Father Eric Pereira,
mm-hmm.
who was ordained to the priesthood on June 4th. Maybe you've already had him on.
We did have him on.
Yeah. Okay.
Delightful.
So he kind of told his story. So I don't want to retell
it. It's a great story, though.
Yeah. So he aimed in the priesthood over many, many years. He was actually, raised in St. Rose Parish.
I think he told me he was 33 when he went to the seminary.
Yeah, he admired the late Monsignor Kavanaugh, who, and he went to elementary at St. Patrick's School. He'd always thought about the priesthood, but he went to CSU Sacramento, mm-hmm. studying humanities, was always very involved in youth retreat ministry and the youth group at St. Rose, and eventually he became the choir director at St. Charles Parish here in Sacramento. Then he taught at St. Charles Music and Fine Arts, and then he taught middle school religion. He went through a lot of experiences.
Yeah, he said he loved it. He loved teaching.
Yeah. Then in 2010, he attended a discernment and retreat at St. Patrick's Seminary in Menlo Park. But it took him 4 years discernment after that,
mm-hmm.
before he submitted his application. So he just said it took all that time to have everything click together. Mm-hmm. And
every vocation story is
it's all
radically different from the next one.
Yeah. So he's going to be serving as parochial vicar at St. Isidore Parish in Yuba City.
Oh, very
starting
good.
In a few days.
That's right.
Yeah.
St. Isidore the farmer.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we have coverage there and some nice pictures of him from his ordination mass and his family and friends and others who know him. Let me see what else here.
And he was the solo. It wasn't a group ordination.
He was the only.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, we also have some other columns in here on parenting and marriage. Mm-hmm. We've got actually a nice ad in here congratulating from the I believe 28 or so priests in the diocese paid for this ad to celebrate Father Thomas Relihan. Do you know him? He's retired from Ione, Sacred Heart in Ione. This year he is celebrating 75 years of priesthood, and he's age 99.
Wow. How many years? 75?
75. You're not many at 75.
He was ordained at a quite young age.
He was ordained on June 22nd, 1947.
Wow.
So, and he served under six bishops, Robert Armstrong, Joseph McEachin, Alden Bell, Francis Quinn, Bishop Wheaton, and Bishop Soto. And among his years of ministry, he served as chaplain to DeWitt State Mental Hospital for 19 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where that was located. I don't remember that. Do you remember that one?
I know the name, but I'm not sure where that was located.
Maybe in the north part of the state? I don't know. As when he came, we would have been, well, we would have had all the counties that would have been now in the Diocese of Santa Rosa. Would have included, because those two dioceses didn't, well, Diocese of Santa Rosa became a diocese in 62.
And some of it broke off from San Francisco, is that right?
Yes, yeah. Marin. Right. I'm sorry, that doesn't include Marin.
Yeah.
Napa.
Napa.
Yeah.
Humboldt
well,
County.
Some were even to Sacramento, and some were even, like we took Solano County. Sacramento took Solano County, which it didn't have before. And Santa Rosa had never been a diocese.
Right, right.
So we included that. So if he would have, if he came in 47, you know, a lot of the first, a lot of the Irish guys who came during that time were posted up at Eureka and Fortuna and Humboldt. Right. I guess it was sort of like they were going to Ireland. In some ways, I don't know if that was on purpose or not. But I've interviewed enough over the years, and it seems like a lot of their first assignments were up along the very far northern California coast. I don't know if they were trying to think that they were, but that included our diocese. Chaplain to the state prison in Susanville, he was for 11 years. Mm-hmm. Pastor of Sacred Heart Parish in Ione for 30 years. And he still lives in Ione.
Wow.
And he's been retired now 13 years. And he's got some genes because his mother lived until she was 103.
Wow.
And so.
Presumably the oldest living priest in the diocese?
Oh, and it used to be, I can't remember, Father John Race. He was the longest ordained, although I don't know that he made it the 75 years. I'd have to look back, but he lived a long time.
That's hard to reach, especially since many of them don't get ordained, maybe late 20s.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or
I think at that time, when the ones who were ordained in Ireland were usually about 25 or 26 when they immigrated.
Looking
to our
at the
diocese.
Pictures of him, looking at him as a young priest, Father Tom, with all that curly hair, and
I don't know if he would do a radio interview with you sometime or not, but you could always try.
We'd love to.
Yeah,
we would love to. I remember we had the great honor of interviewing Bishop Quinn really shortly before he died, and he said it'll need to be by phone, you know, and we said, of course, and I said, we'll just keep you 5 or 10 minutes, and he said, well, that would be good, and gave a full hour, was that right? Full hour, yeah. Full hour. Bishop, we've run out of time. he said he knew he was declining, but he said he wasn't in pain, and he said people would bring him these beautiful things to eat, and he just really, they were beautiful, but he really didn't have the appetite for them.
Sure.
And he said that he had, since he had been in hospice and everything, he says, people stop praying for me. They don't believe I'm sick anymore.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So, Okay, well, that's I think that's our issue. How are we doing on time?
We got about three more minutes.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I do want to mention, I think you had her on the show, or one of the columnists we've been using, her parenting column, Sherry Wolfert.
Right.
Didn't you interview?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so
yes, we did.
Her column this time in the July-August issue is called Creating Strong Catholic Homes. And she says, home is where the seeds of Christ's love are planted and nurtured in a culture that often works against Christian values. The home becomes the greenhouse for growing strong, thriving, bold disciples who are equipped with sturdy roots that allow them to live their lives according to the Father's plan. So she's got some tips here about we should see Christ in our homes. As since we see family pictures, we also should have a reminder of our Christian faith in your home. Holy heroes should have a place in the home. Pictures or statues of saints remind us that we have powerful heavenly help just waiting to intercede for us. And then, of course, you can also have a daily blessing with holy water. Of course, reading from the Bible, prayer groups, saying the rosary. Seeing parents that read scripture and spend quiet time in prayer will inspire children to spend time doing likewise. And then she also has tips on hearing Christ in our homes. How many times do we hear our Heavenly Father's name in the home? We ask each other for help, and we pour out our frustrations, successes, and challenges to each other. But do our homes echo with the sound of speaking our thanks, our needs, and our joys to God?
Hmm.
So she's got some good tips there for families.
She was a great interview.
Very practical.
Yeah, very practical. She talked about, now that high school's over, now what? And about the various things that we don't have to channel every kid to college,
right?
Not necessarily the vocation that fits every kid.
Yes,
that in some families that can be difficult. Mom's got a PhD and Dad's got something else, and they're both academics or they're both off in the high level of the world and son or daughter, they don't have that bent.
And it
can be difficult for them.
Yeah. I also want to mention we have a little bit of a redesign in our magazine this time. Redesigned some of the pages, allowing a little bit more white space.
Yes.
And we didn't redesign the flag, but some of our headline styles and our column headings and like that. So everybody needs a recalibration.
Every now
and then. That's what I heard from my driving back from Wells, Nevada yesterday on my way back from the Tetons with my friend who had
the
GPS
on. In Wells?
Yes, I did.
There was an earthquake time.
And I say no comment on Wells.
There's still some damage in that town where the earthquake didn't get fixed.
Yeah.
Not a bad earthquake, but enough.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's a very small town, but it's kind of a crossroads. You go off to different.
Yeah.
You can go north out of there to
State Highway 93 and I-80.
Up to Jackpot.
We went through Jackpot.
Did you go through Jackpot?
Yes, also Elko and Winnemucca.
Did you stop at Cactus Pete's?
No.
No.
We drove by. At my first time across Nevada, and it might be my last.
Yeah. 93
we'll
is an interesting road.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I love the horse. I don't have this in my car as it's a little bit older, but, on the new cars with the GPS, when you get off the route, then the little lady comes on and says, recalibrating.
Oh, recalibrating.
Recalibrating.
Yeah, my, when that happens
so
when
that's
I'm driving,
what we were doing with our layout, recalibrating.
My wife, Shelley, will say, you made Siri mad.
I don't think Siri recalibrates.
Somebody does in
that's
our
the
car.
GPS lady.
Okay.
That's when I call her. I don't But if we got off the route to, she was recalibrating.
She's going to send you to Lovelock. Yeah.
Okay. Enough jokes about Nevada. They're going to be on our case.
I love Nevada.
Okay. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Julie, okay. And God bless, and we'll talk to you again soon. Okay. That's going to do it for us today. Thanks for listening.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. We'd like to thank all the wonderful people and organizations, businesses in town and throughout the Diocese of Sacramento who have provided underwriting for the Bishop's Hour, some in the last few years, some have been with us for a very long time. If you would like to be an underwriter for the Bishop's Radio Hour, it's a wonderful opportunity to support this mission and also to support the diocese and also to get some recognition for your organization or for your business. The easiest way to do this is to give us a shout, send us an email, radio@scd.org, and we can give you all the details about helping to underwrite the Bishop's Radio Hour. Again, that's radio@scd.org.
Empty hands held high, such small sacrifice. Not joined with my life, I sing in vain tonight. May the words I